doing this.
Are we actually doing this right now?
We're gonna do it!
Guys, I gotta say, I don't feel alone.
Oh.
Okay, so I think we have found...
Guys, I don't...
We have found a...
I don't
found
know
a pattern in the way this game starts, and that is Caleb says a shitty joke, and we are live.
It's our live. Oh, we're live.
That's our intro. That's definitely our
yeah,
intro.
Yeah, we're in. Hey guys, we're back. That's it. Yeah, you made it back. Sorry for the little bit of a delay. We've all we have one day a week that we're able to record, and something has gone wrong for the last while. But we're here now, so that's cool.
You say gone wrong. You are talking about a family member getting married.
Okay, yeah. So
that's not a gone wrong situation. Okay, so that's
not
gone
exactly.
Right.
We don't know. The long game, guys. It might be terrible for both of them.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Oh, not very happy.
God
Caleb,
bless them.
Caleb, hang up. Go home.
I am home, Max. This is my home.
You're not alone.
No.
You're not alone.
Okay, so yeah, we are talking about Thomas Was Alone. So let me just say this, just so in case people haven't played it. The way to describe this game, it takes 2 seconds. You play as colored rectangles with personalities, and it's a puzzle platformer. You just sort of solve puzzles while the narrator gives, delightful descriptions of, these characters and them interacting with each other. Is that basically it?
That's essentially it.
Absolutely.
Okay, so before we start, can I paint you guys a word picture?
Please do, as artists.
Okay,
no.
I'd love to. Okay,
no.
Well, we have a majority, because my vote counts too, so...
Are you using
okay.
sweet typography to make this
no.
word picture? Okay, sorry. I'm not interested. I don't want anything.
All right, I want to take you guys back. Imagine we are back at our college that we all went to. The fluorescent lights are glowing. It's
that will never
day,
be
y'all.
That will never be named.
Yeah,
that
yeah. will never be named. It was a Rubik's Cube.
For no particular reason, just because.
Right.
The smell of coffee and tears is heavy in the air. The professor says, "All right, guys, the last person stepped down from crit. Now it's all right, David, you're up." And you two think, "Oh, fuck, not this guy." And I get up there and I pin Thomas Was Alone to the wall. What do you guys say about it?
Wait, that's not where I thought you were going with this.
No,
so,
no, that was yeah. that was great. I
did not think that's where that was going.
Yeah, that's where it was
either.
Going. I've pinned it to the wall. How do you crit this game?
Your question is, if you made Thomas Was Alone, how would we critique it?
Yeah, just imagine it's crit day. I pin it to the wall. Guys, we are the crit crew. It is a crit cast.
So,
we are critting.
So I'm going to ask you something. Do you just put a square on the wall? Colored square?
No, I take huge pins and I nail a computer to the wall.
Okay.
Makes sense.
And
of it, you know?
And the computer, there's a frowny face on the computer.
There is,
a sign that says, "I have feelings too."
this game, David, definitely give an intro, a proper intro for it for the people who are unfamiliar.
Give a proper
intro.
I mean, I don't really know. I don't know how much there is to say about this game.
Yes.
You just start out you start out as Thomas. You are a red rectangle in this world, and for the most part, most of the game is done through narration. So it starts out with the guy going, "Thomas was alone."
Who sounds
Why
like Steve
alone?
Merchant, by the way.
Yeah. It's Danny something. I don't know. He's Thomas didn't know why he was alone, but he just knew he had to move forward in this world. And then you solve the puzzle. And the next one, he's Thomas would have liked friends. He was, not particularly sad. He just would have liked people. And that's just how the game evolves. And it slowly adds more characters with their own personalities. And they just sort of through the narration, it's the second person is Chris, and he can't jump very high. Mm-hmm. It's Chris was awful pissed that Thomas was, all this jumping around and being
blowing
all happy. What is he all happy about?
Fucking Chris, he's such
Fuck
a hater.
Chris.
That's really the game, though.
I don't
want to spend too much time talking about it, just because, for once, we have a game that we don't need to, intro for too long.
Well,
for sure,
I do have some intro info, actually.
Of course you do.
The game was made by Mike Biddle.
Biffle.
Or Bittell. B-I-T-T-E-L-L.
Peanut brittle?
And brittle. And it actually was a Flash game originally. It did not exist on any consoles.
Yeah, it was originally released in 2010. That's when it came to Flash. But then for Windows and Mac and stuff, that was 2012.
Now, did it have voiceover as a Flash game? Or was that...
I genuinely don't...
I don't either.
I don't know.
Okay.
I haven't played
the
Flash game.
Just wondering.
Yeah. I mean, I was just going to say, so that's the game. Where do we want to begin? Again, we are totally free. We don't have to intro this game for long. We can get into the meat.
I would like to talk about, for listeners, I had played Thomas Was Alone years ago when it first came out. Was a very memorable experience, but since then have really, I mean, forgotten a lot about it. So I'm coming at it with watching a YouTube playthrough. So coming
basically the same.
Why are you guys shaking your head? You know, I'm being as transparent as possible about it.
Welcome to behind the scenes.
I'm pulling, after dark.
I'm cutting that red tape. Is what I'm doing.
No, don't cut it. Leave it intact.
So the thing that is immediately striking for me though is that intro. I mean, that intro is very unassuming in terms of the mechanics that you're using. You are a block that has basic jumping mechanics, but with the narration, it introduces just like this meta awareness that gives meaning to the mechanic. Like, you're discovering yourself, you're discovering your limitations and what really is possible with, you know, each specific block. And I think when they start introducing new and new characters who have, some have like great benefits, like Laura, I think it's Laura, who is just like, is written off as a doormat, is basically just a flat just a flat block, just like laying down,
yeah.
Who people yeah. can bounce off of her, you know?
I will say real quick, there is a very, very thin plot, not as like a, I don't mean that as like a pejorative, like it's just not a big focus of the game necessarily. Mm-hmm. Like the overarching thing is like you're playing as an AI that is becoming, like that has become self-aware. That's like, and that's told through like quotes at the beginning of each chapter from like these like developers and stuff.
From Artificial Life Solutions.
Wow, you really did take notes,
didn't you?
Yeah. Yeah, I really did take notes. Unlike Caleb, I just replayed it last week.
Hey, man, I had to finish it. Dark Souls 3, okay?
Hey, man.
Do you want to just talk about Dark Souls again?
Yeah,
let's do another Dark Souls podcast.
Thomas was alone, Dark Souls 3.
We can keep
I'm deleting my recording. We're starting over, guys. Welcome to the Crit Crew.
We're talking about Dark Souls 3!
All right, anyway.
Anyway.
I think... It's one of those things where I love this game so much that I don't know where to begin when I talk about it. But like, I will say, like, if anyone in a hypothetical argument, if anyone ever asked me like, how are video games art? This is normally the game I like think of first when I try to describe how it can be art, because I feel like the biggest hurdle people have is like, it's a video game. How can you like feel anything? How can it like have a like deep experience? But for like this game, for some of my favorite characters in video games to come from this, and they are just little colored rectangles, yeah. like. This just shows how possible it is to like be connected through interaction.
Here's my question for you guys: is without that narration, do you think this would be a meaningful experience?
No, do you it mean would like not. That narration is so crucially important to the right. game? You just said, do you think this game would be good if it was about controlling rectangles and doing puzzles?
As opposed to
having a plot and characters.
It would be a moderately
entertaining like puzzle platformer. Granted, like it's one of those things where the first time I played it, I remember it being kind of difficult. But now that I know it, like playing through is easy, and I know the answers. So it would be like a moderately challenging puzzle platform,
right?
With and like nice aesthetics, but that's about it.
That's sort of what I'm getting at. Is I mean, this game reminds me very much of the Stanley Parable, which you know is. On its own, kind of a surreal walking simulator, but without that narration, it is not as meaningful.
It's just like walking through confusing rooms.
Yeah, exactly. And I think in this case, you have an established genre of... it feels very much like a Flash platformer, like the very early days of Newgrounds, but it is because of the narration that you begin to feel... more connected to mechanics than anything.
Well, go ahead, Max.
What is it? Well, the thing that's interesting is the narrator. So we're saying that there are characters. They're not voice acted. These right. characters don't have voices attributed to them. They're all just described. Their actions and their feelings are described through the narrator. I think that's impressive. I mean, we're saying that these are characters that we become identified with, but we never actually hear them speak outwardly.
Yeah.
I mean, we're basically liking characters because they're described to us, which is really impressive.
What I like, though, is like, so when you say it's about narration, that almost sounds like, you know, it'd be really easy to like make a boring game, slap funny jokes onto it, and boom, it's better. But, like, that takes it a step further. Like, I like to harp on gameplay and story interacting together because I think it's, like, good policy and makes for more meaningful experiences. Like, the personality that is given to these characters is based on the mechanics they have.
For sure.
Like, it's not just, like, arbitrary, like, well, this guy, like, here's the quirk he has. It's, like, there's one that can jump very high. So, like, John. Like, his character, yeah, John can jump
very high.
And he's
egotistical.
High.
Yeah, he's, and he's, like I'm helping the little like, guys.
Like, all these guys that can't jump high, these, like nerds.
Basically, the first thing that John says is, like, John seeked an audience. And I'm like, Jesus fucking Christ, John.
He smelled the air, and it smelled of awesome.
I think, I actually think the most the most interesting character, I think, is Claire.
Claire is a cool Claire is
Claire's
great.
The best. Claire is the big blue square who thinks she's a superhero because she doesn't sink in poison water.
Yep.
Like, that's,
so, like,
that's
in this game,
so
like, water
cool.
kills everything. And she doesn't, like, she floats in water. So it's like, Claire had a superpower.
And then, like when the world... So the amazing thing is, like, I notice when the world starts to adapt and there's spikes introduced, it is established that Claire thinks she's a superhero. So the line about the world being out to get them and that this is she now has a nemesis and that's perfect because that's when superheroes show up.
I totally thought you were gonna say that the I think the exact phrase she used that it spikes are Claire's kryptonite. That's the other thing. The game is extra effective because it's very outwardly referential to things that are in our exact like world
pop culture.
I mean, they'll reference something where you're like, oh, I know that. I mean, I think they talk about Nathan Fillion at one point in the game. It's like, this is a game that's like trying to literally pretend like it's actually something that happened in the same world that we're in, which is pretty cool.
Yeah
I mean, they refer to the this is the thing I think is an interesting concept is the Fountain of Knowledge, which is a sort of key turning point in the game. That's
sounds,
the internet.
It sounds like it tastes briny.
It's just the internet. The fountain of knowledge is the internet. And it's like, all right, it's not even like it's a different internet. It's the exact same what we have.
So if you're bringing it up, the way the plot goes is like, it starts out on a... Oh, that's my alarm going off.
God!
Like,
civil profesh.
I quit.
End the call.
Yep. The way this game goes is... like, you start out trying to like... You're just, like, aware that you're in, like, Thomas is aware that he's, like, in a, like, thing. He doesn't quite understand the world. And eventually, like Max said, you get to the Fountain of Knowledge, and it's, like, them connecting to the internet. And they have, like, they know everything, and they want to just, like, free the other AI from the system into the real world. And the game ends with you doing that.
So,
which, admit it.
And then you actually play as the AI that were freed.
Yeah. Right. I mean, do you feel like there is a weird tonal shift as soon as... It's like midway through the game that happens where they sacrifice themselves and then we shift off to these new characters. Do you feel like that is a strange tonal shift?
Not really. I'm not
Think it's a tonal shift. It's just that the game put a lot of time into like investing us into this group of characters and then they're not there. Right. And it's like,
it's not a tonal shift. It's just like... The game was best when, like, I don't know how to explain this.
When
I
you had
like
your squad.
Yeah.
Except and there's...
This is something that I'm trying to, like, come to terms with, just, like, doing this podcast, how I interpret art. I know I harp on story a lot. Like, that was my biggest criticism with Dark Souls. But I feel like a game like this, less story in a way is better, because it's not, like, the most important part of the game. Like, you don't need to have everything explained, because the most important part is just, like, these characters interacting together.
Yeah.
So at the point when it's, like, all about this story about trying to free AI, it's not like I dislike the game, that's just, like, it wasn't as strong as the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting, too, because if they really wanted to go into the plot, they would hit a very difficult area of trying to make a company that exists... In a functioning reality. Yeah, I mean, like, at the beginning of levels, there are, like, little, like, clips from, like, little, they're almost like, they look like newspaper clippings from articles that the company that is hosting the servers where they have these AI are basically reporting in on what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be very weird to make a plot where then you have a company that exists in a... structure that we're used to in a video game where it's like, this is a company with employees the AI is fighting. Like,
I mean, it's not like they're gonna create an aperture situation. Yeah. You know, it's definitely not that.
But they're not trying to be that. They're right, the company is very hourly just trying to be a normal tech company. No shady business, no nothing. They just had a weird software bug.
No GLaDOS.
And this is one of those things where it's like, I have these criticisms, and then it's like, okay, what would you suggest? And I'm like,
like, I would suggest what they did.
I have no idea what you would do with this game that they did it differently. It just, I didn't think it was as, like, successful as it could have been.
Mm-hmm.
Look, well, I can crit things, I just don't have suggestions.
Yeah, it's funny
Go ahead, Max.
I was gonna say, that end segment there, it's a little... I don't know, I didn't have the same amount of, like, there's an amount, like, playing the beginning where, like, I was like, I want to beat this level because I want to know more about each character.
Mm-hmm.
And I lost that a bit towards the end, except that there was a part at the very, very end. I'm talking the very, 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 very end, where you have, like, the first couple
characters. Was this at the end?
Where the first couple characters are leaving. I actually found that segment very moving. I was like, this is cool, like...
Mm-hmm.
Where you just kind of keep jumping up into
Right, okay, yep, yeah. I do remember this.
And I was like, this is cool. Like, this is a powerful moment. Yeah. It's incorporating a monumental moment in these characters as a game, as something that you actually play.
Weirdly cinematic too, I'd say.
Well, you actually just reminded me of another thing that I think is just incredible about this game. So, like, it's a puzzle platformer done through narration, but, like, the characters have an arc. Like, think about some of, like, the big budget games that take, like, hours and hours to finish and have so much money behind it, and the characters go nowhere. Like, these are little colored rectangles, you play with them for 2 hours, and they have, like, a beginning, a middle, and an end to their story.
Mm-hmm.
Like, after they get connected to the internet, there's, like, this weird floating, like, lost smoke monster cloud entity that's, like, swooping them up. It's like the computer trying to erase the AI, essentially.
They've been following them, yeah.
Yeah,
Laura had one of those following her.
Yeah, so when Laura is first introduced, that is when you first see the black pixelated monster, and it's kind of just like looming thing that freaks out the rest of the gang. They're like, "Let's just leave Laura behind because what the fuck's up with that thing?"
And it's weird because the explanation of that antagonistic cloud is it's just a software mechanism that's trying to limit the amount of AI in a scenario together.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it is. It's like, it's just a computer interface. It's a program that is trying to do its job.
But so, like
these,
I just think that the way it's presented, though, you immediately recognize it as evil. But
oh yeah,
it's
because it's a pixelated smoke monster.
Right, exactly. It's all visual.
In reality, there's not really a villain in this game.
Oh, totally. Right.
It's it's literally just like...
I mean, the world becomes a villainous thing, but it's because of the limitations you have as a character. I think that's an amazing distinction, is that there really is not a villain. It's just your abilities are tested, and the world kind of adapts to it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a very believable, like... It's a very... Anyone that wants to make AI Chef to play Thomas Was Alone first to gain a little sympathy.
You are creating children.
This is the inverse of Soma. This is like, instead of angry AI, this is AI that's like, no, we just want to be a part of things.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And I think with the narration too, I was noticing how, you know, you have this narration telling you the motivations of characters, how they feel towards one another. And like, I love the part where Laura and Chris are separated and they're just starting to bud into a relationship, and she starts to feel feelings towards him, and they're clearly separated, but you know, they're using level design to further emphasize character motivations. You know, like there are so many instances where one character has to use the other in order to jump up to another. And you're creating, like, based off the knowledge of what you know for these characters, you're creating these little moments with them. Like, you're filling in the gaps, it feels like. And that is without any sort of exposition or anything like that. You as a player feel like you're working as a team to achieve this one goal. And I think that's it's a good little consequence of the writing that they have in the game.
It's just so interesting, because I was doing some research too, and like, the developer wanted to make that, like, first and foremost, it was a game about friendship, and like, I feel like every single decision he made was like all about that, and it shows.
Yeah.
Like, also, that... quick note, did you know like the art was like he based the aesthetics off of Mondrian's work?
Really?
Doesn't that totally make sense? Not like once you like hear that.
Yeah. I can see that.
All right, that was my little aside.
No, that was a good aside. I like it. Thank you. Like it.
Thanks, Wikipedia.
Hey, thanks, who's Wiki. That? Who's that, guys?
Mondrian. He's like the grid. I don't like Max. I don't know. I'm not gonna try to do this.
How do I spell that?
Mondrian.
Mon.
Listeners, you too can look up Mondrian and see.
Wait, spell again. Sorry.
This is our art history side.
Look at the art. It's art time.
Oh my, look at those squares. Oh my God, listener, isn't that incredible?
So it's M O N.
You know who Mondrian is. You're gonna look at it and be like, "Oh, I'm dumb.
We can't keep doing this."
Oh, okay, okay.
It's Piet Mondrian.
Got it. Yep.
You know that guy that
the art. I pooped that out. I pooped that out in Photoshop.
Wow, that's a who you gonna get some criticism for that?
Yep. Well, our send hardcore your art historian
death threats to
podcast@gmail.com. Yeah.
I was saying expect at least one disapproving text from one of my parents.
Yeah.
I say. Your dad's just gonna say, "I'm very disappointed in you."
He's gonna be like, "How dare you criticize Mondrian?" Anyway, we're getting off topic.
Okay. So off topic.
He was the creator of the Rubik's Cube, right?
I'm done.
Can I introduce a new topic, or do we want to like
go for it.
Something I've brought up before is how I think art, you know, it's about a conversation, and I think it's really interesting to look at like what else was going on in the video game industry at this time. Caleb, you're the one that originally brought this up, but like I went looking around, and so I was looking at 2010, which is when this was released as a Flash game. And, like, if you look at the other games that were being made then, like, I have it pulled up right now. Like, you have, like, Halo Reach, Mass Effect 2, Red Dead Redemption, SpongeBob's Boating Party. Like, you have some, like, really big games coming out.
You really needed to throw in SpongeBob's Boating Party, didn't you?
I mean, I think he needed to establish that the video game industry was, like, really at its watershed.
The pinnacle.
Oh, hey, Bayonetta came out that year, by the way.
Oh, Bayonetta came out?
Yeah, that's did. Cool. I'm looking at it right now.
Okay, so, like, yeah, all these, like, big-name games were coming out, and I'm not trying to say, like, that these are, like, bad, but, like, so, like, you had those games coming out, and this was also when some other indie darlings were coming out, like Super Meat Boy and Limbo came out in 2010 as well. It's so, like, if you just look at, like, what was going on in this landscape, like, I think it was, in a way, whether it was intentional or not, like, you have some really, like, AAA big, like, shooters, and then, like, you have this coming out, and it's almost, like, the exact opposite of what was popular at the time.
Like, I didn't realize this came out with Super Meat Boy. That's pretty big. Those are both pretty monumental indie games.
Yeah, so I feel like it's just, like, such an interesting time where I feel like this is when indie games started to make a push at, like, you can have these small, simple experiences compared to, like, and again, I'm not trying to say indie's better or these big names are like or these big games are bad. It's just interesting to see what was else happening. Like, what could have you been like responding to?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely around 2010. That's when XBLA and, you know, PS3, they had a better framework of pumping out indie games. So there was, I feel like 2010 around that era was like a renaissance for platforming. Like, you talk about Limbo and Super Meat Boy, both very different experiences. You know, Super Meat Boy, arcadey, amplified Super Mario Brothers, basically, with punishing difficulty. And Limbo is more about just the experience, really. And Thomas Was Alone is a good middle ground, I feel like. And it definitely, 2010 was not... I mean, it definitely set a precedent for what indie games on consoles
It's interesting to me because, like, I can't really... Like, I had to research this. I couldn't really say what the state of the video game industry was because games like this are what really got me into it in the first place.
Interesting, yeah.
Like, I freshman year, I was probably playing, like, basically all the Valve games. Like, Left 4 Dead, TF2, Half-Life. That was pretty much all I did. Mm-hmm. And then I got one of the Humble Bundles... And, like, that just, like, kicked it, like, everything off for me. Like that's when I really started focusing. So, like, games like Thomas Was Alone are why I'm here right now, essentially.
It created you.
I am Thomas.
You are alone.
He actually, like, David has painted himself this weird salmon color. I don't know what's going on right now.
Oh,
and
no.
He's contorting himself in a cube.
He's yep. a red.
Look, allow look me a, to bounce away. Mondrian
painting. But look, Mondrian painting. Caleb doesn't know what that
David,
is.
David, I don't know what that is, apparently. David, I think it's crucial to look at something like this in the context of the gaming industry because there's definitely been more of an emphasis on these smaller, succinct experiences since 2010, around that era. Because before that, there was not really the marketplace on consoles to deliver full games, really. I mean, the Live Arcade store was not that at all. It was just becoming a thing. And I think having this sort of experience that is digestible, is affordable too. Mm-hmm. I feel like since then, the idea of a AAA video game has lessened in importance. I do believe that.
And on the flip side, like, you know, and just in the span of 6 years, like, now it's to a point where, like, indie game isn't really a term. They're just games.
They're just
like,
games.
There's so
exactly.
many, it's, like, not worth specifying. Like,
well, like,
they've pushed
there's
past that.
There's a case we made that, like, Soma was an indie game, and, like, that doesn't look like an indie game. That looks like an old right. AAA game. That's a big, like, indie can now be, like, a term used on a pretty substantial production.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so in the span of 6 years, we went to, like, from my understanding, like, the peak of indie gaming to now they're just, like, part of the industry. They're part of the mm-hmm. culture.
I think so. That something like Humble Bundle was one of the things that would probably start making that a thing. I mean... I also started getting into indie games because you could get a bunch off the Humble Bundle. Also, this episode is a free ad for the Humble Bundle.
You're welcome. For charity.
But like
sponsored by Humble Bundle.
Yeah. When it comes to talking about video games as art, like, this is a huge part of it. Like, what else was going on at the time? Yeah, how much money can we get from the sponsors? But just like talking about like the culture and the industry and like how games build off of each other to move forward.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think that's an important thing going forward if we talk about games that are years old, just to look at maybe its contemporaries and maybe games in the same genre would be helpful, just to get a good foundation to talk about it, like any piece of art. I'm glad you brought that up, honestly.
You're welcome, baby.
Because it really is a very strange time for... consoles in general. It just had not been... DLC was sort of the only possible thing you could really down... Like, horse armor in Oblivion. Like, that sort of... Well, you didn't eat that shit up, Max?
Sorry. Oh, God. You started talking about DLC.
He actually just...
overcome by the urge to vomit
He threw up a horse just now.
I am dripping. I'm sorry.
I'm dripping in horse.
I was going to imply that I threw up parts of a horse, but I'll throw up a whole
horse.
Here
we go.
Okay. I think we're sufficiently off the rails. Is there anything else we wanted to talk about?
God, we're off the rails at this point.
Well, I mean, like it's a short game, so like this is going to be a shorter episode. Like, was there anything else we wanted to talk about?
I do want to talk about the second half not being as strong. I did appreciate, though, we want to talk about the visual... cues in what we identify as like characteristics of these blocks in the second half of the game when the gray just slabs who can soak up anything can go through these cross-hatched areas depending on the color which is associated to the previous characters they take on their attributes which I thought was a really amazing touch of like this crew that you were, you know, you saw their journey to be connected to the internet, they're now just a part of the world. And you can adapt. Yeah. I mean, it's very much like the internet. You can draw upon their resources in order to get ahead, you know? I thought that was a really nice touch.
Man, the internet's really great, you guys. Have you ever heard of it?
What's the internet? I really don't know, though.
What's the internet?
Do you get a disc? Do you get, like, one of those discs that you put in?
Yeah, you have to install the internet on your computer.
Okay.
We'll post this episode to our bulletin board.
Make sure no one's using the phone, though, guys.
Top notch.
Oh, man. But, I would say if you have not played Thomas Was Alone, definitely check it out. And at this point, you can play it on almost every console.
Mm-hmm. For, like, no money.
For, like, no money. I was looking at it. It's so easy to find somewhere to play it. It's like PS3, PS4, Wii U, Mac. PC, Mac. Is it on Linux, I think, too?
Yeah.
It's so accessible. It's so easy to get a copy of.
If you wait a couple years, people will probably pay you to play this game.
Right.
It's like, you get $2 from Mike to play this game.
If you wait a couple years, it'll probably be playable on, like, I don't know, out there. It'll be everywhere. It'll be playable on chess
laser boards. Screens.
Laser, like everyone has laser screens, you dumbass.
We couldn't have gone a further direction, David. You said laser screens and I said chessboards.
Well, on laser chess.
Laser chess.
Well, that's the future.
I think it's safe to move on to final thoughts. Okay. So just as a reminder, for the sake of structure, instead of giving like our final opinion on this game, talk about what you think it added to the conversation of art, what you think it did for video games as an art form.
I'm just gonna say my opinion because I don't listen to you.
Okay, that's good. I mean, fuck it. I don't even do this podcast.
Yeah, I don't even care. Whatever. I don't even care.
What'd you have for dinner yesterday?
What did you have for dinner? Did your mom cook some rendang?
Jesus.
All right, sorry.
Let's not talk about dinner. This episode goes off the rails left and right.
Yeah. Real talk.
So real talk. Final thoughts. I'm starting. Okay.
Yeah, you said you were starting.
I didn't want to start. Yeah, I think in terms of, at the time, again, bringing up the fact that there weren't a whole lot of indie games. I mean, I think this is kind of one of those games that really introduced indie games into the conversation heavily. I mean, it's good. It's real good.
Yeah.
I think all in all, it's just a very strong game. What did it add to the conversation? I don't know. You want to take this for a bit, David?
Okay. Yeah. I mean, basically what I said, I think the two most important things is, one, I think this is just like a perfect example of showing how video games can be art, just showing like through like the mechanics of interacting with something, how attached you can be to it and how like meaningful those experiences could be. And yeah, just what we talked about. Like, I think this definitely left an impression on the landscape mm-hmm. of video games that were made after it.
Yeah.
So, well, I think that's pretty big for a game that's only 2 hours long.
Yeah, for me, it's just like it goes back to the Pixar style of thinking of humanizing what is mm-hmm. essentially, like, could be a functional object or just an object in general. It is because of the fact that, like, they simplify. I mean, the game itself is a platformer. It has some challenging puzzles, but it is about the fact that like they had enough restraint to understand what they wanted to make important and what they were trying to humanize. And video games don't do that. I mean, we have a lot of things that like are dehumanizing and is just about like pure gratification. And I think Thomas is alone. He's forever alone. is a reaction to that. Honestly, mm-hmm. it is in an industry that was predominantly dominated. That was the height of Call of Duty, frankly. It is a reaction to that gratification, and it sort of just pulls back the reins and just allows you to get invested in these very simple shapes. And it's because of that focus. And I think that's the biggest contribution that it made, really.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So. It's very... I don't know if... I mean, thinking about the games that were coming out at the time, this might be one of the... Because now there's a lot more games like this where like the game picks their one strength and says, this is my strength. I know it's mm-hmm. my strength. This is what I'm going to focus on.
There are many like it, but this one is mine.
This one is mine. It seems like this is sort of... Because I mean, that's not as much of a thing with, like, you know, AAA games, they try to, like, we're gonna have a lot of strength. Because we have the money, we'll make this good and this good.
Assassin's Creed. Far Cry.
Oh, that's gonna sound real nice.
Sorry, there's something that I burped up just now.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, man, we're having some digestive issues between the group of us. I'm throwing up, Kale's burping up, but,
I'm flawless.
You're flawless. You're always flawless. Yeah, it's just, it's a game that knows what it is and just focused on perfecting what it was.
Mm-hmm. He is what it was, and that's all it was.
Thanks.
That's how we do.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
Thanks, guys.
This was a one we were all really looking forward to. We don't know what game will be next. We have a couple on the list. If you want to give us suggestions or just give us your thoughts or send your Thomas Was Alone fan art, send it to crickcrewpodcast@gmail.com.
Let me open up Photoshop real quick.
That is the official email. So yeah. How did we end the podcast last time? Did Caleb say this crit was adjourned and that's how we ended out? We did it.
All right, do we want to keep doing that? Should I clear my throat for this? I mean, like, here we go.
This crit was adjourned.
Fuck you, man.